Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's been a nice, serene, quiet morning. Nothing much going on at all. I open up my laptop, all hell breaks loose. Welcome to the Pink and Channels, Connor Southall, joined by Paddy Davitt to try and reflect and dissect and analyse all of the events of the morning. If you've missed it, goodness me, where have you been? Because it's been manic. So we'll try and map out a timeline. We're going to speak about them all individually. Of course, if you've got any questions, any comments that you'd like to chip in with during the time that we're live, then feel free to do that on whatever platform you are watching. We're streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and X as well. So yeah, do get in touch. We have had Ante Cernak. Is what we're going with at this moment in time.
I was going with Cernak, Connor, but you're saying Cernak. Yeah, it doesn't really matter. We're probably both wrong.
We're open to somebody telling us in the comments what the actual pronunciation is, but Cernak we'll go with. Norwich City closing in on a deal to sign him. Abu Kamara, this all happened in the space of 10 minutes, by the way, has formally put in a transfer request now at the football club. We'll be speaking a little bit about that. This is one that's been bubbling under, I think it's fair to say, for a few weeks. And if that wasn't enough, then we've got the small matter of Jonathan Rowe, of course, currently with the under-21s, not in the first team picture at the moment at Norwich City, left out of games against Stevenage and at the weekend against Blackburn after, of course, withdrawing himself from availability in the Championship opener against Oxford. So still that's rumbling on. Marseille now getting pretty close to what Norwich City would want for Jonathan Rowe and that valuation. So all of that has happened in what has been a really hectic morning. You can imagine, how are your fingers, Paddy, from all the typing?
That was an amusing GIF you put out there, Connor. Quite like that one with the animal typing furiously. Was it an animal?
It was, yeah. It was a cat, yeah, which is quite apt at the moment because I'm currently cat-sitting two kittens who are about 4 months old. So if the chaos from the work perspective hasn't been enough, then chucking on a couple of kittens and a four-year-old onto that has been pretty manic as well. Paddy, how's your morning been? Have you had time to draw breath after what was a real flurry of activity on the transfer front this morning? I've even seen, I think I woke up this morning and saw a few supporters getting a little bit uneasy about how quiet it is. Unease no more, I would suggest.
No. I mean, I know always with these, I mean, Cernak primarily because that's an incoming and obviously the other two episodes will be potentially, nothing's decided yet, but outgoing. So on him, you always with these type of things, drops wherever the source of it drops and then you work your way back and piece it back from there. And purely on a new striker, well, we know, sadly, the Yildirim deal wasn't one they pursued at post-medical stage. Few concerns moving forward, nothing particularly in the here and now, but we've mapped that out and dialogued that, so that's there and on our channels, go and read that. But obviously back end of last week he was going to be the Adameda replacement. They have to pivot away. We have chats with Johannes pre and post Blackburn and Saturday afternoon sat there at Colney about 5 o'clock. He said, look, I can't promise, but I'm pretty confident that by Sheffield United's visit, which is this coming Saturday, obviously, that striker will be in the building. And maybe wisely after the Yildirim, we won't say, as one or two of our profession have already said, it's a done deal, it's completed. clearly isn't, because he hasn't had his medical yet. And until that point, until we're past that point and everything's happy and all parties are happy, then we're not going to be seeing holding him up a Norwich shirt or a Norwich scarf. But touching wood in front of me here, then it would seem that he is the player who will be the replacement, and replacement not maybe in a like-for-like sense, because I thought Johannes was good on that, how he mapped out the profile of attacking option they're looking for. And we'll get into what this guy is, and he's very clearly not an out-and-out Adam Eder replacement in terms of on the pitch, but I think he is the one that they were looking for in the top end of the pitch. And the sum, as we're led to believe, is very similar. You know, €8.5 million, around about 10 million euro total package. So effectively, give or take, it's the money they've banked for Eder has gone straight back out, or is going straight back out for a very exciting now, because I can't profess that I woke up this morning and knew who Ante Černak was, or even Rakow Chestakovia either. I've been pronouncing that, his club. Didn't know too much about them. Obviously, we had a little bit of an insight into the Extra Liga with Poeta when they went there and did that deal in seasons past. But having obviously in the intervening hour or two, 20 years of age, he looks a very exciting player. I've seen some of those clips, which again, you're always loath to base too much off a 2-minute YouTube compilation. But the pace, the left-footedness, that's a very intriguing element. Yet another left-footed signing this summer. But to commit to that outlay for a 20-year-old, and for me, the standout is he's only actually moved to Poland from Croatia last September. So he's effectively just had just under a full season. He went for just over, reportedly, €1 million. And in that intervening period, his value has now skyrocketed. You know, there was clubs in Germany, Werder Bremen reportedly put a bid down as well. So maybe that's why Norwich have had to go to the levels they have had to go to secure this guy, because it would seem he's quite a hot property. And at 20, I mean, with the right coaching and the right environment, he could be anything, couldn't he? So you've got to be excited by the potential of Ante Černak in a Norwich shirt, I think.
Yeah, I feel like I've definitely signed him on Football Manager, because the name feels really similar to me. Not that there's any sort of insight that you can glean from that, but I think he's one of those ones that have done the rounds. It is interesting, isn't it, Paddy? Because you look at Yildirim, who obviously was pretty close to becoming a Norwich City player last week. He was a striker who could also play out wide. And I've seen a lot of sort of conversation about this, and we will delve into some of the comments. I know there's some questions and whatnot, but this is courtesy of Transfermarkt. So these are all the positions. There we go. All the positions that he's played in his career. You can see predominantly has played as a centre forward, as a striker, also played on the right wing, also played a little bit on the left wing, and as an attacking midfielder as well. So he chimes in with what we've been reporting for weeks, really, that Norwich City would like players with a little bit of versatility. This is somebody who can clearly do that. And of course, when there is Josh Sargent in the building and you've got a striker of that quality, it's useful to have a player who can maybe play in different areas, particularly with lots of potential, because it will then help his development in terms of game time, won't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is the point I think Johannes was getting at, that they were, him and Ben Napper and Neil Adams and the recruitment people and obviously Johannes' coaching staff, were having some serious discussions post-Adam Eder's departure about what do they want? What do they want? Because you mentioned Josh Sargent there. You know, clearly there was interest in him from America, particularly earlier in the window. That window is closed now. The MLS transfer window is closed. And I don't think there's any real sense at the minute that Josh Sargent is going to be departing.
This is useful for us.
Certainly.
It's pronounced Černak. Thank you very much.
Is that you or me?
I would try and pronounce your name, but I'm going to butcher it, so I don't want to offend. But that's, I much appreciate that. So Černak, Paddy, is what we're going
for. Černak, we're going Černak. So me and you were completely off beam, as usual, with the pronunciations. Černak. But going back to Josh Sargent, it feels, you know, never say never, because we're on the 20th of August and there's still 10 days left in the window, and things can, as underlined this morning, things can happen in 10 minutes, never mind 10 days. So, but if Josh Sargent's staying and he's your out-and-out number nine, then Černak clearly is going to be in and around it. He's not going to be coming in to dislodge Josh Sargent. Absolutely no way in terms of leading the line. So you're looking at a player who's comfortable in slightly wider areas. I've seen some other reports today that the Polish season so far he's been playing as almost a support striker rather than the out-and-out. So you can see how that knits together with Josh Sargent, who is obviously Norwich's focal point attacking wise. So, as I say, I think, and at 20 as well, I mean, you know, you don't really want to be pigeonholing a player positionally at that age. I mean, it looks like, again, with the caveat that we're only going off some sort of social media type clips, but, you know, you see where he picks the ball up, the spaces he operates in, the ability he's got all the way along the front line. I think what they're bringing in is that word, versatility. We've seen it with Callum Doyle in the defensive setting, that they want multi-purpose players. And I think once we get past all this excitement, and hopefully it's all goes through and everything's signed, sealed, delivered, that they'll, that probably the remaining bits of transfer business they want to do inward will also have that common thread, which is a versatile midfielder. So, yeah, he certainly fits the profile in regards of what Norwich have tried to do this summer, which is players who are interchangeable. And this guy would seem all the way across, and that graphic illustrated it for me, Connor. He can operate. And you just go back to the last 12 months, both the final games he played in Croatia and last season in Poland, and now this season he's been centre forward, he's been attacking mid this season, he's been right-sided, left-sided wing. You know, it's a multi-dimensional player, it would seem, Norwich have targeted.
Yeah, indeed, absolutely. We'll chat about him a bit more in a moment, just to delve into some of your comments. And this is one I think, Paddy, we can both relate to from Ollie. Boys, you've done me a solid. Just got my two-year-old off to sleep on a walk. Now I can tune into some juicy NCFC chat. So happy to be of service, Ollie, and very well done. It's always nice when you manage to get them down for a little while and have some peace and quiet, or not. You could choose to have some nonsense in your ears, as it seems you've done, but we appreciate it very much. Lots more comments on Sarnach as well, so I'll come to some of these. Nick, he's said, is Sarnach an Ida replacement / Sarja future-proofing / row replacement, or maybe a bit of all three? I mean, we've kind of just had this discussion, Paddy, in terms of position, but the way it's been packaged to us is very much Adam Ida striking replacement, isn't it? Rather than the two other options there, which probably does move us into a different conversation about John Rowe. But just to say on Sarnach at the moment, he feels like one that they're identifying very much as one to join their striking stable, with obviously the context that we've just mapped out there. They wanted a versatile option, and it feels like they're close, but not completely. And we'll just peek the curtain back. I don't think we would ever say something is done, because that would be a bit silly then if something didn't get done, as was the case last week.
He hasn't had his medical. And exactly. Obviously that usually is a formality, we know, but it wasn't last week. So, yeah.
Exactly. So you will always find from us that we try and tend to leave ourselves a little bit of wriggle room. Always worth reading the full story, as to maybe get a gauge as to how close something is or isn't. But anyway, back to Nick's question. Pad feels very much like a player that they are looking at with a mind to that striking position, whether you want to say that's Sergeant future-proofing or not.
Potentially, because I think it's pretty clear that, and we all hope that is the case, he remains a Norwich, but Josh Sargent remains a Norwich player beyond this window. But if Norwich aren't out of the Championship in pretty short order, then Josh Sargent won't be hanging around, I don't think, because he's too good for the Championship. And if it isn't to be this window, I think we'd be back here again January, maybe more likely at the end of next season, in terms of Josh Sargent, if Norwich remain a Championship entity. So that is a fair point. But categorically, yeah, he's not a Rowe replacement, and we'll move on to that. But if and when John Rowe departs, they would look to do another winger. So so he isn't, even though he can operate off the right-hand side, a la John Rowe, he's not a John Rowe like-for-like replacement.
Yeah, worth noting. So in terms, as Paddy mapped out, not had his medical yet. The clubs have obviously agreed what they've agreed. And the hope is that this will move to completion this week. Whether or not that he's done and registered in time for Sheffield United on Saturday, we'll have to see. I think the cut-off point for that is midday on Friday, I think, from looking into it with Forson. So they've got a fair bit of time to try and get this done. And if medical is tomorrow, then that gives them, 48 hours or so to get all of the little bits detailed. But as we know, now there's so many more hoops to jump through with work permits and GBEs and all of this carry on. So there's probably an element of that, and international clearance and all of these things take time. So not a formality that he's in the squad for Saturday, but I think you have to say, as we sit here at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, the hope is that will be the case. So we'll see how that unfolds. And as Will points out, you would expect it to be a long-term deal, wouldn't you, really? But as Paddy mapped out, been linked with Werder Bremen, had strong interest from elsewhere as well over this summer. seems to be very highly rated from what he's done in Poland and Croatia before that as well. Really interesting profile of signing. And Paddy, just to finish this chat, really, another interesting quirk of Norwich City's development, 5 signings this summer, he'd be the 5th left-footer. There's something going on. Someone has got a tab full of right or left-footers and are just looking at left-footers at the moment for whatever reason.
Yeah, that is a mad statistic. And I'm sure it's definitely not coincidence the way that Napa works and the way that Torup would appear to work, very forensic in their detail. I mean, it was a time where left-sided play, remember that whole debate when it used to be with England, you know, in recent past, that a left-sider was almost to be treasured and put on a pedestal.
Saw it in the summer.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. So that continues, really, yeah. But we've gone from that to certainly this summer in terms of Norwich's recruitment, subject to this getting done, you know, 5. I know Doyle's a loanee, but they've clearly looked at it and looked at maybe there was an imbalance, and you can understand why, because the way that Torup's game model is, it is about, you know,
interesting from Adam, just to highlight that. I'm sure Arsenal made signing left foot as a priority. Don't know if that is the case without having a real in-depth look at their business, but obviously that is where Ben Napper is from. So I guess that would tally up to an extent.
Yeah, yeah. There's clearly some data-led reasoning behind it, because it's not coincidence, is it? If you've targeted 5 now left-sided players, then whether that's a trend within the game more broadly or just, as I say, bringing it back to Torup and his game model. And, you know, we saw... And to be fair, it's pertinent because we're having this discussion about, well, can you have 2 left-sided centre-backs because of maybe the Hanley and the Duffy element? And maybe that isn't going to be the case. But it was painful at Oxford, you know, when you had Callum Doyle playing left-hand side that day, and there was a period in the first half where he was almost chalk on his boots, and he just wasn't able to turn out and find him because you had essentially a right-sided player playing on the left side of the defence. So, yeah, whether it's defensively or further forward in terms of Cernach, yeah, I guess that ability to go left and right is highly desirable, yeah.
Indeed. Right, we're going to move on now to Kamara and John Rowe news. There's over 1,000 people watching, so thank you very much for your support on this Tuesday lunchtime. Really appreciate you tuning in. And of course, get your comments, get your questions in. We'll flash them up throughout, and we'll come to your questions as well. And social soccer, I'm afraid you've just caught the back end of it, but we have literally just spoken about him. When this goes live, you'll be able to watch that back. I'm not sure you can rewind in real time. You might be able to on YouTube, to be fair. I'm not quite sure, but we have just spoken about him. But if you've got any relevant questions, chuck them in and we'll do our best to answer them. Paddy, where do you want to go first, John Rowe or Abu Kamara?
Well, given it's the newest of new developments, should we go Abu Kamara, I think, Connor?
Let's do it. Where are we with Abu Kamara? Map out what has happened this morning.
Well, sadly, really, in terms of that man's willingness to be part of what they're trying to build here, he clearly feels that his future lies elsewhere. And he, and when I say he, I'm talking about him and his advisors around him, his camp, have officially submitted a transfer request. So effectively, you're saying, I don't want to be here. I want to get out of my contract. I want to move on. I see my future elsewhere. That's clearly a hugely disappointing turn of events, certainly from the Norwich perspective, because, you know, I mean, we only threw them up in the last 24 hours. The Torup quotes about bracketing him with Gabe Forsyth, with Brad Hills, one or two others, Ken Abbo earlier in the summer. And essentially, this head coach has been recruited to work alongside Ben Napper to develop young talent for Norwich's first team in the here and now, but obviously then, because of the financial implications, the resale element. We've seen it now most recently with Adam Eder. You know, that you can develop young players both in terms of improving your own team, but also eventually, when the time is right, to add that transfer value. And that has been the case in the past. It's felt that hasn't been the case in maybe the most recent seasons, but Torup is here alongside Napa to reconnect that academy pipeline. And In that environment, Abu Kamara is very much a player who's been developed at Norwich and has the ability, as he showed clearly in terms of what he's capable of in the game at Portsmouth last season. I know it was League One, but in a team who won the title, he was a key player for them. So you would have thought he'll come back to his parent club, and with the step up the league, he should be able to come and kick on again in his career. Now, obviously, at the start of the season, he hasn't been a frontline option. He was kind of used sparingly, I felt, in pre-season, which was in itself a signal that maybe Torup, as he's talked about with Brad Hills and one or two other players, future, no doubt, future Norwich players, but maybe in the here and now they have to find, and he keeps using this phrase, pathway. We might need to find the right pathway for these players. And as a result, you know, the first two championship games, he's come off the bench. Now, without speaking to Abu Kamara and his advisors, they're clearly, it would seem, frustrated that the game time hasn't come. And maybe he's come back, quite rightly, he's been the main man at Portsmouth, or one of the main men, and he's now, they maybe feel set for a bit part role. The frustration is that it would seem, given the course of events that's gone public today, that there isn't any common ground, that the club and Napa and Torup and him and his advisors haven't sat around the table, and as they seemingly are doing with Ken Abbo, just putting a plan in place, as they seemingly are with Gabe Forsyth and with Brad Hills, a plan in place that all parties can agree to, that if it is to be, right, not here, not right now, then go out, maybe get another loan posting, go and play some more football, but we believe in you, we value you, and we want you to be part of it. And to that end, within the last 2 or 3 weeks, there's been contract talks between the parties on Abu Kamara. That isn't a signal that Norwich are sending that they don't believe in the player and they want him out the door. Just to clarify, his current contract, it's one more year, like John Rowe, with a club option on top. So he's not out of contract imminently. There's 2 years, potentially, of contract still to run on Abu Kamara. But Norwich have, this summer, tried to strive to reach out to him and his advisors off the back of what he did at Portsmouth, where he proved himself as a very, very highly rated young player, to offer him a new deal. Now, as I say, we don't really, because it's different individuals involved, but let's not draw too close a parallel with John Rowe and his camp and how they've acted. But
yeah, sorry to jump in, but I just wanted to answer this from Kevin. Not the same agent or agency or anything like that. Completely separate.
But you can understand the question, and you can understand it looks like another young player who Norwich have developed and fashioned and brought to this point where they're kind of just on the cusp, obviously. Not in Rowe's case, he's made that breakthrough, but certainly in Kamara's case. And now they turn around and they don't feel Norwich is the right environment for them. That's hard to take, certainly if you're anything to do with Norwich, I would imagine. But where does it stand? Well, the practicalities are, a transfer request has gone in. There's no, as we are led to believe, firm offers on the table. There's no clubs waiting in the wings to pick him up. That, you will feel, might be the tactic of choice from his side, to smoke out any interest. You know, we've seen copious links this summer from Celtic and Anderlecht to Southampton and Portsmouth again and Hull City. You can expect that to accelerate again. But the position from Norwich's point of view is they don't want to sell him. They believe in him. He's part of their future. He's under contract. So it's now, the ball is firmly in the court of another club to come to Norwich between now and August the 30th and match their valuation. But as we sit here right now, Abu Kamara has very visibly, very publicly said, Norwich City, not for me.
Yeah, we had a long debate about John Rowe, I think, on the podcast, and the tactics that him and his camp deployed prior to that first game of the season against Oxford. And I couldn't, from a strategic perspective, understand that at the time. I do not understand this more, but I think you can sort of, I kind of get, I think, where Kamara's coming from for the reasons that you've mapped out. I think there's been a feeling for a long period of time for him that maybe he just feels like he needs to go elsewhere, and that maybe the fit isn't quite right. And as you say, maybe things haven't quite panned out in the way that him or his representatives would like. So I can understand, particularly when you're seeing Gabe Forsyth start ahead of you after what was, I think we both felt, a pretty encouraging step forward against Stevenage from him. He scored, of course, on that night. But I think it would be disappointing, wouldn't it, for Norwich to lose a player of his potential at this stage of his development, because there's clearly a real talent in there. I think he's looked raw throughout pre-season, but you can see the minerals. He's a good height. He's technically pretty good. He's positionally, I think, quite interesting. He's quite a fun player, I think, if you could get the right coach behind him. So you can understand that. And clearly there is interest bubbling under the surface. And I think that's obvious, as we've seen throughout this summer as well. So it whenever a player puts in a transfer request, it feels hard to row back from, and excuse, pardon the pun, and feels hard to get to a stage where they are then both accepted and they accept playing for the club that they're at. So it does feel like it's going to roll into one direction. But equally, Norwich needs some solid offers on the table, which probably begs us to think of question.
Throw that one at you, Colin. Buying Bean, apologies. Any idea what you think the club's valuation would be on Kamara?
Oh, it's a good question, isn't it? I think if he wasn't on 2 years, I think it would probably be a lot higher. I think if you could get 4 or 5 million for him, then I think that would be decent, with a decent sell-on clause at this stage in case he does go and kick on, which I think he would do elsewhere, by the way. So that's probably around the ballpark that I think you'd want to get that closer to five. And I think what we are seeing from Norwich, and we saw it with Gabby Sarah, Adam Eder, we'll see it with Jonathan Rowe as well, who we're going to come on to. Norwich City, whatever their valuation is of that player, and I'll get your opinion on where you think or what bracket you think he should be, they will dig their heels in. They're not going to do business at anything below what they want to get for that player. So I'm sure they have, I'm certain they have a valuation for him. So now it'll just be a case of meeting it. So yeah, throw that question back at you, Paddy. Where would you put him in terms of valuation that would start a conversation or would be acceptable for Norwich City? That's a stinker, Harry.
That's a blow, Harry. That really is a blow. Sorry about that, mate. It's hard, as you say, on the body of, albeit excellent season for Portsmouth in League One, but it was League One with the greatest respect. So he hasn't proven at either of the top two levels in this country that he is a player of not just promise, but actually, you know, he's delivering on a consistent basis. So for that reason, you know, if Rowe, as we get into that debate, who has proven, you know, bar the injuries, he has proven himself Championship and above, I think it's safe to say now. And we're talking in the ballpark 14, 15 million pound figure. So, yeah, probably five would be the top level for me, I think, on the ceiling, yeah, with obviously constituent add-ons and sell-ons, if he then goes on to be that player who I feel he could be. But right now, he's not that player. So, and as you say, contractually, it is one plus an option. So, we're not in either territory of 4 or 5 years left, 4 years in Adam's case. So, yeah, for all those, pull all those threads together, I think five would be the absolute tops, and probably, yeah, 3 to 5, I think, would be your spread for me.
Yeah, agreed. Let's come to this question, because I think we've spoken about this a little bit on the podcast, but you can understand why there is this view amongst fans at the moment from Paul, which is, why do you think Norwich appear to have so many unhappy players? And I think if you're a supporter, again, I think we referenced it particularly after Rogate, but more generally, you've watched this summer, you know, Gabby Sarah obviously leave. We can debate, as you know, obviously he handled himself in the right way compared to maybe two of the players that we're speaking about this afternoon. If you feel that that's not the right way to operate, increasingly in football, it is the way to operate, unfortunately. Obviously, Adam Eder, who made very little secret of his desire to return to Celtic, and I think that's pretty obvious. Jonathan Rowe, who's obviously refused to opted to withdraw himself from the squad, whatever the semantics and however you want to word that, that's what happened. And Abu Kamara with a transfer request. There's four players there, and four pretty young players by all accounts that have made themselves known not to want to be at Norwich City this summer. If you're a fan, you are watching on with Paul's view, aren't you? Which is, why do Norwich seem to have so many unhappy players? So can you answer that, Paddy? Is it just unfortunate, coincidental? What would you answer that with?
I really don't think there's one simple answer that covers all those different scenarios, because they're all different. You know, for me, it's maybe where they felt the direction of the club was going previously, and it's been graphically underlined in the window this summer, but also now increasingly on the pitch with each passing game. And we're not even getting into what's happening above in terms of board level, and that process is now very clearly moving towards a change of ownership. So all of that feels new, different and exciting and optimistic. But, you know, if you're looking at it in a purely selfish, self-interested kind of view, then Adam Eder wanted out because he wasn't getting regular football under David Wagner. He got his loan move, his dream loan move to Celtic. It went as well as anybody could have expected. So absolutely no doubt he doesn't want to come back to Norwich. He wants to stay at Celtic. Well, why wouldn't you? I think most players who don't have an affiliation to Norwich, who've gone and tasted that, and supposedly a boyhood Celtic fan, and, you know, playing in Parkhead every other week and now European football, you know, that for me was a very straightforward case. You know, Rowe, does he feel that his time is done here? That, you know, maybe he's outstripped Championship football and everything that came to him so fast last season. Maybe that's turned his head. And, you know, because it's not just this window, it was last January window. There was Serie A clubs, there was Premier League clubs tracking him. Maybe he felt, you know, one season of Championship football and I'm done and I'm out and I want out of here. And, you know, if that is the case, then things need to happen to facilitate that. And the same with Kamara now. But yeah, maybe it is the question sort of leads to, well, why can't Norwich convince these players to stay and sort of be part of it? But You know,
is this a point from maybe, down here about pathways and where the club has been?
But on that very point, Ken Abbo is the weather vane that maybe that's starting to turn now, because Ken Abbo, I'm pretty sure Ken Abbo leaves if it's the previous regime in the summer. I think he does an Alex Matos and he's out the door because he doesn't see that pathway. No, he put pen to paper and okay, in the here and now, it might not be him in the Norwich first team, but he was convinced enough by Napa, by Torup and the people around them that, no, I can see that there is that pathway. Unfortunately, Kamara and Rowe, particularly, and Eder even, much further along their path than the Abbos of this world were. So it might just be, and it's all come together this summer. So it might feel like there's a bigger issue at play. I just think it's maybe that sense of timing and where these players are in their respective journeys. Adam Eder doesn't want to come back here now and kick his heels behind Josh Sargent, clearly. So that makes sense. John Rowe, as I say, if he feels, well, it's hard not to get carried away when you've got a club as big as Marseille sort of knocking on the door three times now and trying to get you out of here, but and go and work with Roberto De Zerbi and all that, you know, sort of glamour that's attached to that. So, but there is a common denominator with Rowe and with Kamara. And unfortunately, I think it is the people around him and advising him. And I think Torup was very clear on that last Thursday when I spoke to him about Rowe and where are we with Rowe? Is he back in the first team group or not? And getting offside with the fans with John Rowe, from Derby hero, could do no wrong, to where he is now with the fan base. And Torup's answer was, it's a lonely, lonely business if you put yourself out there and go on your own path and you don't have the right advice from family and friends around you because you're a young player, never experiencing these type of things before. And if you don't get the right advice around you, then you get in a situation where Rowe has been and maybe Kamara is going to find himself now. So I think for me, there is, in those two instances, it's less about what the club aren't doing or why have they unhappy players. Maybe you have to look a bit closer to home and look in the mirror, and it's the players and their advisors.
Yeah, agreed. And again, you've mapped it out really well there. But I think there are different circumstances at play in each of these cases. That, you know, if you're Torup, for example, I really feel for him. And obviously, he knew what the case was walking into the club. But could he have foreseen John Rowe withdrawing from the squad on the day of a game? Of course, he couldn't. 20 minutes before a team meeting, absolutely not. Could he have foreseen Abu Kamara, one of the one of their shining lights, really, someone that as you mapped out, they really like, they really saw a pathway for, they really saw involvement for this window. Could you foresee him putting in a transfer request 10 days before the window closes? Absolutely not. Could you foresee Adam Eder going back to Eden? Yeah, Celtic, potentially you could do. But the events that led to it, the Austria saga and the constant noise around that and the difficulty, and to be fair to Adam Eder, as Torup mapped out, was clearly asked before the Oxford game whether or not he wanted to play, and he did want to play. So that is the way that you do go about conducting yourself, which probably then just... catch up for Harry here, who might have missed it. He's put in a formal transfer request, Harry. So that's what we are discussing here this afternoon. Let's move on to Jonathan Rowe. And this one, Paddy, does feel like it's moving in the right direction from maybe his perspective, because Marseille, as reported this morning, have been back in with a third bid. And it feels like this is now going in the right direction, doesn't it? It now feels pretty likely. And again, we'll never say certain for the reasons that we mapped out earlier. But I think if I had 50p, you'd put 50p on John Rowe not being a Norwich City player come 1st of September.
Yeah, I think I'd match your 50p and put a few more quid on it as well, Connor. Yeah, I mean, you only have to break it down now in the space of, where are we? 10 days or so now, Friday before Oxford to, you know, this Tuesday morning, three bids have now come in from Olympique Marseille for John Rowe. Three bids. You know, not one, and then dialogue, three actual bids. They want him. They're a player. There's a player there. They've identified De Zerbi and the people around him. He's just gone in. Now they seem to be getting linked with a lot of players and willing to commit a lot of sums of money. So there's obviously a huge project underway there. And John Rowe has been identified as the profile of attacking wide player that they would like to bring in. So, okay, no worries. Yeah. As long as my four-month old doesn't start up, and then otherwise we are in trouble. You'll be on a solo mission, in Connor. So where are we? To take it right back, Oxford, day before, bid goes in, reportedly around 7 million, straight buy option. Barely acknowledged by Norwich, so far below Norwich's valuation for that player. Roll it on past Oxford and all the fallout from that. Middle of last week now, another offer communicated formally. this time structure of the deal, loan with a buy obligation, believed to be a bit closer to Norwich's valuation, but still nowhere near. That gets short shrift as well. Then just over this past weekend, another offer comes in, loan again with a buy obligation. John Percy's reported it. That figure, we believe, is the accurate figure. 13.5. That's where they are now. £13 million. So still, as it's been communicated to us this morning from the club, not quite there, but a lot closer to where Norwich believe John Rowe's valuation. I've had a bit of dialogue with the French end this morning. They quote, there's a lot of confidence in their boardroom that this deal will get done. There's a little bit of an issue maybe around percentage of the sell-on fee. You know, what is the percentage that the clubs can agree on? So for me, if you get into the finite elements of this deal, it'll get done. It'll get done. I don't see any other clubs at the table at the minute, despite reportedly interest from other leagues. You know, Leeds keep being mentioned, but as far as we're concerned, that's still only ever been a cursory dialogue a week or so back. Certainly no firm bid from Leeds. They're now getting linked with that Manuel Benson, aren't they, I believe. So in Norwich. But Leeds seem to be a long way down the track with him. So that would suggest that they've pivoted away. Therefore, Marseille are in pole. They're at a level of offer that is certainly now serious and it's advanced and the dialogue is active now. Whereas I think the previous two bids, it was almost bid went in and that was where it was left. It was almost derisory, yeah. I think, from my point of view.
Which isn't the etiquette, really. It's not seen as very good transfer etiquette. To just, particularly on the eve of a game, to slap a bid in without picking the phone up and saying, look, we're thinking of this, where are you at? That gives you usually a little bit of, to be fair, that's what Leeds did initially, but I haven't followed that up subsequently. So when you're sort of getting email, well, I don't know who is email or however you communicate facts, however you decide to communicate these offers and they're just slapped in, it makes it very difficult, I think, in terms of a dialogue, doesn't it? So that's an interesting element to this. And it does now sound like there is that dialogue going on. So if we have got to the dialogue stage, then as you say, Paddy, this feels like it's going in the right direction for everybody. Can I just ask you before you come back, because there's been a few of these type of questions, I'll pick out Steve's. Does a loan with an obligation to buy have any get outs, or is it just a way to pay most of the money later? Could they pull out a year after paying? What if he gets injured? Can you answer some of those questions for us?
No, an obligation is set in stone. Yeah, there's no backtracking it, unless, of course, Norwich were agreeable to it. But, of course, then, you know, there's a little bit of the vibe of the Jolis Fortuna deal, albeit there was that was an option rather than an obligation. But, of course, given how well he did, you know, Fortuna couldn't get the money down quick enough to cash in on him. But, no, an obligation. I'm trying to think deals past. I think Norwich had an obligation with was Ben Gibson an obligation and Dimi Yiannoulis? I think they were, weren't they?
Upon promotion.
So,
another example is the Max Aarons one in Barcelona. So that bid was with an option, wasn't it? So all of those elements that we've just mapped out, they weren't nailed in, whereas Norwich wanted an obligation, which would have been guaranteed money. So you can see the difference between option and an obligation. Sort of predicated on different achievements. But as we understand, this is just pure obligation. So it's just a case of delaying the deal, which they could do for a host of reasons. I think we've all seen in the Premier League PSR and elements like this. I think they've spent quite a bit of money this summer as well. So this is just delaying basically the payment for 12 months. But for Norwich City, they are guaranteed that payment.
But it is an interesting point in terms of from Norwich's perspective, because obviously with their PSR position and with the rolling annual accounts, you know, that isn't money that will go into trying to work it out now, counts usually to the end of June, aren't they, each year? So that wouldn't even probably log this current set of accounts, i.e. to the end of June 2025. We'd obviously have to get some advice from financial officials at the club about where that money would sit. But that
you could loan against it, though, couldn't you, if you guaranteed it, a bit like you do with Premier League money. So if you know that money's coming in...
It's guaranteed income. But I just wonder whether, because you effectively are allowing, in this case, Marseille to defer payment, not optionally pay it. No, they will pay, but it's just when they pay. Whether that might be some of the horse trading that Norwich, if it's going to be that type of deal, okay. But if you're not paying anything this window or the next 12 months, then maybe they want a slightly higher fee. So that would be interesting, the sort of the to-ing and fro-ing around how an obligation as opposed to an option impacts the actual price they agree on.
Well, one question for me as well would be, would Norwich get a loan fee? Because we see with loans as well, there is often a fee attached to them. Would that happen? Would that be just included in the obligation? I think all of these are pretty valid questions that obviously we'll do our best to find out on. But the structure of it is really interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there must be reasons why Marseille aren't willing to commit in this current trading window. And it might be their financial position, you know, in terms of whatever the regulations domestically are in France and then more broadly in terms of European football. But I haven't looked at some of their other deals closely enough this summer, if I'm honest. So I don't know if they've structured a few of these other deals. Didn't you sent me a link earlier on? There was another player they were linked with, and that was a loan with a buy option again.
Can't remember the player. I'll try and find it when you
right back, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a right back. So again, you know, if they're looking at another deal that is a similar loan obligation, have they hit their threshold for this trading window? And any other business they do has to be almost, in terms of the accounting element of it, the money's pushed into another financial pattern period.
Yeah, just to answer this question from Yellow Canary on Marseille's business, I think you maybe have to have a look at who they've signed this summer to suggest that maybe there's any sort of moral place there. But I would suggest that's the game. That is what happens. And that is the case. And in terms of, because where people will be looking at it, Paddy, and obviously we've mapped out the Abu Kamara situation as of time of recording, no bids, well, very much interest. And I think we've seen that rumble on throughout the summer from various parties. What will Norwich City do in terms of a replacement? Because they're going to have to sign one winger now, aren't they? We sort of covered off and we said that they'd probably like one, but maybe one that could play as a striker, which is, I've forgotten how we were saying Cernach. That's poor. So Cernach is kind of. So do you think in the event of Rowe, potentially Kamara as well, they'd have to go in for another winger given where they're at and given where that staple of the squad is?
That is the sense from inside the club. Yeah, that, you know, subject to this deal getting done with Marseille, they would be back in the market for a winger. But I mean, we were led to believe that they're looking maybe at an eight as well. So whether you put the two together and you're looking for that versatility again, possibly. But you know, it almost feels like they probably need to do another couple of more bits of business, i.e., a midfielder and an out winger. And given, you know, where they've looked, the markets that they've looked for in terms of Cordoba, in terms of Cernach now, Yildirim and previously, I think it's safe to say they might be pivoting towards Europe again in terms of their winger search, rather than, you know, we've seen the links to Manuel Benson, but that doesn't feel like that's a goer. Certainly wasn't a few days ago, was it? Norwich were quite keen to pour cold water on that originally, that link, but you know, you could understand, as they've been so adept at doing this summer, the scenario planning for the what-ifs. So it's not going to be John Rowe, hypothetically, is a Marseille player by the end of the week, and then they have to...
What do
they
do now? Yeah.
They turn the page in that big book of Ben Napper's and there's a blank page. No, there'll be plenty of potential wingers that their recruitment team right now will be drilling down into. You can be sure of that.
Yeah, indeed. Just to ask you this one as well, because we've had it a few times, but I'll ask BN, which is good in French. So I don't know if that's your name, but I'm using a little bit of my French GCSE there. Sorry if this has been mentioned, but are Norwich looking at a defensive midfielder? We've had it from Shaney as well. Lads, are we a CDM short, not replaced Oliver Skip since he left the club a few years ago? He, of course, has just joined Leicester for £20 million. So that shows you where he's at the moment. And Adam just pointed out that it was Højbjerg from Spurs, which was a loan with £15 million option to buy for Marseille. But of course, in John Rowe's case, it would be an obligation. So that would be essentially a deal done from Norwich City's perspective. But he would remain their player until next summer, essentially. So that's mapped out. But defensive midfielders, Paddy, where are we at with that? Because it's not been something, certainly, that I've heard throughout this summer, that Norwich City are in the market for that position. Obviously, there were links with Jonathan Varane in January, which is a player they very much like, but the numbers didn't make sense. He's obviously joined QPR in this window for, it was about £1 million, wasn't it? I think all in. Where do you think Norwich are in terms of that defensive midfielder situation and position?
No, I mean, we had a lot of questions again on this very topic on our Q&A we do on a Monday afternoon on the Pinken app. If you haven't got one already, why not? But go and have a try.
Excellent plug.
3-month trial period. Why not join the movement? But no. And you mapped it out perfectly there, Connor. A CDM in the Skip/Varan mold, it doesn't seem to be compatible with a Torup game model, really. You look at his work at Nordsjælland, you look at Manqua Forsen, there you go, there's your template. You know, that's the type of midfielder he wants, and you wouldn't pigeonhole him as a six if we want to put a number on the position of the field, you would associate with a CDM. They want the box-to-box type, who's able to progress the ball, very good technically in tight spaces, turning out, finding the right options, but always progressive, always looking forward, always driving forward. They don't want a sitter in front of the back four, a Makélélé type, a Kanté type. That's not how Torrox Norwich City game model it looks. So I think the simple answer is, are they looking for a defensive midfielder in a specialist role? The answer is no. So, you know, the Varane one obviously predates Torrox coming in. That was a different head coach, a different time. And obviously there was a player maybe at that stage of the cycle, but that was January. Now it's August and we have a new head coach and a dramatically different style of play. And as a result, very different type of profile of player that they're looking to recruit.
Yeah, a couple more questions. Finlay asking if the club will look at Premier League loans. There was, of course, the link with the lad who's joined Sheffield United, so we might see him this weekend. Jack Sackey, who joined them on loan. Norwich City did have a look at him, but again, when you're talking about Premier League loans, often the loan fees are astronomical. I mean, for him, for example, it was £1.5 million, which is, you know, you're almost better going out and signing a player for that, which you can go and do on the continent or in other areas. So I think, of course, they look in different areas, but it has to make financial sense. And if you're in a world where, let's say, you're paying a £3-4 million loan fee for a Premier League loan striker, or you can go and buy one like Sarnach in the way they have with the potential and everything, then I think you edge more towards that. And we know, obviously, Norwich would like to do a little bit more permanently. We did have a question as well, and apologies if I can't find it now, but it was about Grant Hanley and him potentially departing on loan. Paddy, you might have it in front of you there if you can.
There's another one. I've found it, but this one as well.
Yeah. On you go.
You answer that one, Connor.
Yeah, well, Barnes, I think there was a bit of chatter towards the first part of the summer that possibly something could happen around him, but it's all gone quiet since the injury-related element. So I think now, with where his situation is, with where he is contractually with a year left, I don't really see that being something explored this summer. Whether, again, it's something in January. I mean, we saw with Jordan Hugill, didn't we? It was essentially told that if you can go and get yourself an 18-2-year deal somewhere else, then go and do it and we'll let you go. I could see that type of scenario panning out in January if Ashley Barnes maybe doesn't have the role that he would like at the club in the 6 months that he's here. And obviously, there's a possibility that he does come in and play a role. We can't totally discount that. I feel like in the system that we're watching, that feels pretty unlikely at the moment, but I'm sure he'll be willing to give that a go. But that's kind of how I see that. So you take this one from Luke, which is, do you think there's any chance Norwich will try and shift someone like Grant Hanley out on loan? I can't imagine he'll be happy sitting on the bench, so might be best for everyone. What do you make of that?
Well, I was just double checking, actually looking at his contractual status. He's a 2025 and there's no option. So this is essentially now he's into his final season as a Norwich player. As it stands, there isn't any live contract talks, so we're led to believe. But much like you've just mapped out with Barnes, I could see that two things really. If he's, and it seems at the minute he's not quite in Torrox 11, certainly in his thought process, if that was to continue for the foreseeable, certainly between now and maybe the January window, then by that stage, he's 6 months out from the end of his contract. Are you in a Hugel type scenario, which would get his wages obviously off the books early? Because it'd be clear then from the club's perspective, from Grant's perspective, look, you're not going to be a frontline option here moving forward anymore now. So he'll want to get his future secured, I'm sure. Whether that could happen as soon as this window, it feels a bit soon, you know, 10 days left. You've still just got Cordoba back. Krazeni and Doyle are new to it all. He hasn't quite made his mind up, it would seem, about Warner and Hills and whether they stay in or go out on loan. Feels very fluid that would get resolved in terms of Grant Hanley leaving in this window. Can't say for definite, but there's been no talk or any sense of that. But I just think by the time we rolled it on to January, if we're where we are now in January, then you Grant Hanley, there's not a lot down for you here. You're probably looking for your next move, aren't you? So, but as is reiterated again by the Nappers of this world and Torrox, you know, the Hanleys, and I think, you know, I mean, you were at that recent fans forum, the fan social with Kenny McLean and a couple of the other players, and I think I'm not breaching any confidence. I think Kenny told an anecdote about around the John Rose situation post-Oxford, how Hanley had almost sort of gone out of his way to sit him down and have a chat with him, and kind of that leadership role in the dressing room and the captain putting an arm around a young player. And And that is one thing you cannot underestimate, that Handley is a huge figure in that dressing room dynamic. And I just think at this early stage of the Torrop era, do you want to be losing that, even if he's not going to be week in, week out, one of the first names on the team sheet? So I'll be amazed, really, if anything happened in this window. But if we got to January and he's not played a lot of football, then, yeah, you could see with his contractual situation, you could probably see a parting of the ways for all concerned.
Agreed. Right, we're going to be live for about 5 minutes or so, so get those last remaining questions in. We've got a few quick fire ones here that I will do. I've completely lost the one I was looking at. Here we go, from Kevin. Has there been any more said or any more news on someone we haven't mentioned, that is Angus Gunn? He's got a year left on his contract. So as things stand, or as they certainly stood last week, there's been no movement in terms of any conversations about his contract. I think that is probably one, along with obviously a host of others. There's a few that are out of contract next time. Brad Hills was one of those, for example. They've obviously got him tied up. I think those sort of conversations are ones that will be happening post-transfer window. But you do get the sense that there is a willingness and a want to try and get him on a new deal when they can. But obviously, as we've mapped out, there are so many spinning plates and so many things in the works. I'm sure Ben Napper's phone is red hot. There's only so many things that you can...
I'm sure
both his phones are red hot. I'm sure there will be a moment for that. Alex has asked the question, will we be seeing loans for the under-21s that won't be seeing first-team action? Canabo, for example, can't be wanting to spend another year in the under-21s, and quite frankly, got 4 assists the other night. He's far too good for that level. He doesn't need to be at that level anymore. And it does sound like there's a few clubs in the works. We reported this over the weekend. Might have got lost a little bit in the game action, but Notts County, certainly one that like him, but there's a host of EFL clubs as well. So for him, that almost feels like, Paddy, getting the right club, doesn't it? Somewhere where he's going to go and play football, be first choice as well. I think that's really important. Whether he would be that at Notts County, I don't know. I don't know enough about it, really. But that sort of, ironically, when we talk about Abu Kamara, that's almost what he wants to go and replicate, isn't it? Somewhere else. With obviously Norwich now having a bit more certainty of where he is contractually.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, I mean, you saw it end of last season, how many they put out on loan from Hills, Kamara, Adeboyega, Mayer, you know, could go on. There's a few more, Tomkinson, Warner. So that will be the case specifically with that under 21 cohort. I think you'll see a movement between now and clearly August the 30th. Abbo will be one.
Tomkinson,
yeah, I could see that. I could see Finlay Welsh as well, doesn't seem to be part of it as well. So if they could be moved on, Tony Springett, he seems to have
Just on him, I know he hasn't been involved in a lot, and there's been a lot of conversation from that. From what I gather, that's an injury rather than anything else. So whether that would hamper anything that could happen this window, I don't know. But it seems like there's a little bit of an injury there. That's meant we've not seen him since Belgium, have we? Which is over a month ago now. So that injury is, I don't know. But it does sound like that is an injury.
But I mean, more interestingly for me, because with the greatest respect, we've listed players there who probably you don't really see them in and around orbiting the first team. But a Forsyth, what does he do with him? Does he keep him close, or does he feel in 10, 11 days' time that, you know, maybe, particularly if they've done the bits of business we're sort of intimating that they might want to do, that's going to push him further down the pecking order? Yeah. Like a Bow, development football, he's probably outgrown that now. So do you slot him in somewhere of a good level loan-wise and have a look again in January? Do you just maybe keep him here until January, then let him go? This is the kind of interconnected... I mean, clearly, we just spent the last hour or so, Montoya, another one, yeah.
He could go permanently, by the way. I think there is a situation where he takes up one of the... not CBE, that's an award, isn't it? What am I thinking of? GBE, that's what I'm thinking of. He takes up one of those slots. So I think if there was a potential to maybe shift him out to open up another slot, that's one they'd look at. But yeah, probably going to be a loan, you would suggest. Sorry, Paddy.
No, yeah. So basically that underlines, you know, we've talked in this little segment here about probably 5 or 6 of these young players. And while a lot of the focus inevitably is on what's happening at the front end, you know, that will have a knock-on effect. And I think you will see between now and August the 30th, quite substantial movement around that group. You know, Elliot Miles, again, you know, he just seems to be one who's knocking on the door, probably too good now for development football. What happens to him? You know, but I guess you do need to keep enough personnel in the building because you do have 21s fixtures, don't you? So you need to put a team out on the park. But that's secondary to the right pathways to use Torrop's line for these players, and getting them into a position where, sadly, Kamara being a good example, you get them almost to the threshold of your first team, and then it's what you do next. It's, as they always say, that final step is very often the most difficult one.
Yeah, I need to check this, Kieran, but I think you would, from what I've seen. I think you would, but it's always a very difficult calculation because the places that you can look say different things often. So we need to get absolute clarity, and we'll probably do
Were Croatia in the 21s Euros as well? I think they might have been.
And I think it was. Again, it's slightly different for players under 21 than it is for sort of players who are over 23, I think, maybe. So, yeah, we need to clarify that. But I think he probably does at this stage. But again, we will ask the question and get clarity of that. If and when he does arrive. Right, very finally then, Paddy, because we could sit here and talk for 2 hours, but probably best we don't do that for the people who are watching. Let's end with Josh's question. I think there's been another few questions on Josh Sargent as well. We've kind of touched around it, and that MLS interest, that window's now closed. There was, by all accounts, a pretty significant bid for him in the first part of the window, and that interest has rumbled on throughout. Been links with Bournemouth. Brentford's very interesting as well now, about to lose Ivan Toney, whether that's a situation that becomes live. Where do you think we are with him and his Norwich City future?
Well, I mean, I'll go no further than what Torup said to me on Thursday last, you know, that he's 100% committed and focused. And of course, did he not underline that on Saturday? You know, he could have had 4 or 5 goals. I mean, he ended up with 1 goal and an assist. That wasn't a player who pertinent to some of the players who we've discussed in this segment don't want to be here and are making it clear they don't want to be here. He isn't of that mind, but yeah, definitely, yeah.
Thanks, Jeff, man. Get well soon as well. I saw you. You've got a hospital stay, so I hope that's nothing too serious.
Oh, best of luck, mate. Yeah, no. So, as it stands, he's a Norwich player, and there's no firm interest now that MLS window is closed. I mean, I was told, you know, that bid was 20 million. So, you know, if it started with a 2 and Norwich didn't entertain it, that tells you how they value Josh Sargent. So. But you mentioned Brentford, and as a result, we can't say right here, right now, at this stage of the window, that he will be a Norwich player because, you know, every player, as we've seen too often, this window maybe for my liking, because I like a quieter life, but that every player, there can be something goes, clicks, chain reaction, i.e. Brentford need a player, and off we go. I think there will be speculation around him, sadly, and we'll have to deal with that, but you just hope that they can convince him, maybe just to give him, you know, certainly till January and hopefully this season as well. Because for all the no doubt excitement that's now generated by Cernach and you know, Cordoba prior to that, and maybe even Forsan, you take Josh Sargent out of this mix. I mean, it just, as it was underlined on Saturday, it's very hard to see how they could push forward on the pitch without Josh Sargent in their ranks this season. So, you know, hopefully they get the finances they're looking for from a road deal, and that will just allow them, in good dialogue with Sargent and his camp, if there is a bid that comes out of the ether, just to say, look, no, we don't need to do it from a financial point of view. Give us another season, a la Buendi at that time. Give us 6 months, give us another season, and then, you know, you go with our best wishes, a la Max Aarons, a la Gabby Zara. I'd hope that would be the scenario that plays out with Josh Sargent, rather than, you know, 2 hours from the end of the window, Friday week, is it? I think Josh Sargent is no longer a Norwich player. That would be a disaster zone. So let's not talk that one up, Connor.
Yes, let's not. We could all do without that. Right, that seems like a really good place to leave it. Paddy, thank you very much for joining us and for your time. Thank you all very much for watching. For us, if you join us late and you want to catch up on Sarnach or Rowe or Kamara or any of that latest, then you can do that on our YouTube channel or wherever you've watched this. There should be the full thing available. Obviously, let us know what you think, etc. So, thank you. Thank you very much for watching. And let's hope that the flurry of activity from this morning continues positively this week. And hopefully we're talking about maybe a couple of incomers before Sheffield United. Let's see what happens. At least one, certainly. Thank you very much for watching. See you soon.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.